Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
It's Construction Safety Week. What the feds are doing to ensure the safety of workers' wages. That's right, we'll explain. Amazon defeats a union election in New York. And today on the show, the latest from the Ohio AFL-CIO. And we'll check in with the bricklayers in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Timothy Berga will be our first guest today, longtime regular and contributor to America's Workforce. He's president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, and today is primary election day, and we've got some hotly contested races in the state of Ohio. We're going to run them all down. Then we're going to get into redistricting. Not everybody is on the ballot in the state of Ohio today. There's going to be another election in August, and that's primarily because the lawmakers have yet to figure out the state maps. And there's been some calculating on how much this is costing taxpayers. The overall cost has ballooned, according to one report, to nearly $1.8 million. And that's primarily because the lawmakers have stalled and they've hired a number of law firms to figure out what to do. And the law firms are connected to the political parties that don't want to change the maps. It's a really interesting scenario. Tim's going to run that all down. There is also a proposal to phase out Ohio's state income tax in 10 years. New legislation. And this is something that was touted by the former governor, John Kasich, some years ago. In fact, he cut taxes pretty drastically. And there's been a tug of war going on because they're saying, well, wait a minute, by doing that, all you're going to do is put the burden on the poor. Because if you cut taxes in one area, what does that mean? Probably raise like sales taxes. And we know who that affects. There was a big rally yesterday in Lorain, Ohio. It was called the Marine Highway National Security Ohio Jobs Rally. And Tim was there along with Sherrod Brown and the people that are probably going to be involved if this does happen. And we're talking about a project where they would repair submarines and some ships in Lorain and Lordstown. The Metal Trades Department, the AFL-CIO, is pushing this. We'll get Tim's take on that as well. Glenn Kelly will be joining us later in the show. No stranger to the show. He's been on at least once, maybe twice. And he is the president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers Local 8 in the Southeast. Their website is baclocal8se.org. He's based in Atlanta, Georgia. And we'll talk about a couple of projects that's going to occupy a lot of work. A lot of work in the southeast portion of the United States. One of them is the Ford plant. This is a huge facility, and it's going to draw workers probably from about 4, maybe 5 states. And we're talking about a new electric vehicle assembly plant. General Motors is also involved, and we'll talk about project labor agreements as well that seem to be working out pretty well in that area. And I'll tell you, that's not what you call union-friendly. A little background, the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers has committed, this is right off their website, committed to rebuilding the construction industry in the South with new leadership. BAC Local 8 Southeast is ready to offer the high-quality service needed to support contractors in our industry. Our collective bargaining agreement has up-to-date language with no hidden clauses. All negotiations are handled in a pleasant and cordial manner. We are here to provide you with the skilled manpower that you need and serve our members. And their goal? Think outside the box. If it can be done legally, we will find a way to make it work. Let us show you how to turn a bigger profit by joining an American family tradition and be able to hire the best hands in the business to man your jobs. And all you got to do is go union. Real simple. You got the best of the best right there. Get it done right. Get it done the first time, right? Glenn Kelly will be joining us later in the show. Well, yesterday started National Construction Safety Week. And when you talk about construction safety, you obviously think about safety on the jobs, minimizing injuries, deaths. Last week was Workers' Memorial Week. We talked a lot about that on the show. This is a little bit different, though. This is about protecting workers' wages. With many projects supported by the bipartisan infrastructure law gaining speed around the country as temperatures rise and the ground softens, the U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division is showing its commitment to ensuring the safety of workers' wages during the annual celebration of National Construction Safety Week. Started yesterday, it'll wrap up this Friday, May 2nd through May 6th. And what they did, they announced new compliance assistance materials, including a toolkit in both English and Spanish languages, specifically to help construction workers understand their rights and inform employers about their legal obligations. In addition, the division has launched a webpage to help construction employees and employers understand Davis-Bacon worker protections, which are contained in the infrastructure law. Got a quote here from Jessica Lumen. Jessica is the acting wage and hour division administrator, and she says, "We are depending on construction industry workers to help us realize the promise and benefits of the bipartisan infrastructure law. Many work long hours in difficult conditions, and we owe it to them to ensure that their jobs are good jobs and that employers pay them fair wages and benefits. So, during this week, National Construction Safety Week, we recognize that the safety and health of workers includes ensuring economic security for them and their families." Now, listen to this. In fiscal year 2021, the division, it's a wage and hour division, identified more than $36 million in back wages owed to about 21,000 construction industry workers. In the same period, violations of the Davis-Bacon and related acts, wage laws governing federally funded projects, recovered more than $12 million in back wages covering 4,000 workers. That's a chunk of money for a lot of workers. In the industry, division investigators commonly find violations related to the misclassification of workers as independent contractors, failing to pay employees work-related travel time and pre- and post-shift work, and not paying overtime as required for hours over 40 in a work week. On federally funded projects, failing to pay the correct prevailing wage rate, improper calculations of required fringe benefits, and not paying for all hours of work and making illegal deductions from wages are pretty common. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects construction industry employment to grow at a rate of 6% until 2030 and gain approximately 400,000 jobs. Employers who comply with labor laws will be better positioned to recruit and retain skilled workers. Lumen added, as the number of jobs grows in the coming decade, employers who deny workers their full wages and benefits, either intentionally or not, may find it more difficult to attract and keep the people they need to make their businesses successful. So, it's National Construction Safety Week. It's important that you know your rights on the job. And if you're getting screwed, speak up. Speak up. Let's talk about Amazon. the grassroots labor union that made history last month when it formed the first union at an Amazon warehouse in the United States, lost a union election at a much smaller facility just across the street. This election was held last week at the Staten Island sorting facility known as LDJ5, and the votes of which were counted Monday was the second to be organized by the Amazon Labor Union, a newly established union started by a local group of Amazon warehouse workers and led by a fired employee, Christian Smalls. The vote was tabulated yesterday at the National Labor Relations Board in their Brooklyn office, and it was broadcast over Zoom. There were 618 votes against unionizing and 380 in favor. Out of 1,633 eligible voters, 998 votes were counted. There were no challenge ballots, and two ballots were voided. So it's done. They're not going to review this one the way it stands right now. Amazon has repeatedly said in statements that, quote, employees have always had a choice whether or not to join a union, end of quote. While spending millions on consultants to combat unions last year alone and running an anti-union campaign inside the facilities. Yeah, they have spent millions and millions of dollars to bust the union. Amazon said it was disappointed with the JFK8 results and laid out a number of objections to the previous Staten Island union vote as it called for a do-over, an NLRB hearing on the matter is scheduled for later this month. So they're going to fight this tooth and nail, and you knew that. Meanwhile, Starbucks Workers United campaign continues to electrify the nation. And right now, more than 250 stores have petitioned the NLRB for elections, and more than 40 have voted to unionize across the country. And get this, on Saturday, the Washington Post reported that President Biden is considering inviting union organizers from Amazon and Starbucks to the White House in what would be a major showing of support for union organizing. That will be a photo op, no doubt. And how about this? With all these efforts growing at Starbucks chains around the country, the organizing I'm referring to, Law 360's Employment Authority has put together what they call a Starbucks unionization tracker. That's right. The tracker features an interactive map that shows how many Starbucks locations have taken official steps to unionize in each city, as well as the status of those efforts. Pretty interesting. By the way, Law 360, that's subscription-based, so if you want to check that out, they do have an initial offer for free. But eventually you'll have to pay if you want to continue on Law 360. But right now, 250 locations and growing. All right, quick break. When we come back, Tim Berg on behalf of the Ohio AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. In fact, Dave Meganhart, longtime director of the ULA, will be joining us tomorrow on the show. Right now, though, let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Welcome one of our regulars, and that would be Mr. Timothy Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. And as I indicated, big day in the state of Ohio and a number of states today around the country. It's primary election day. Timothy Berga, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, my brother?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks for having me. And as you say, it's one of, I guess, two primary elections that we'll have this year. So it's a big day.
Yeah, that's right. They couldn't contain it in one day because there's been some fighting with regard to the districts. And in today's election, we're talking about the governor's race, the Senate race. Oh, my God. The Senate race, now on the Republican side, I was reading, it's the most expensive in history. It's somewhere upwards of $60 million. And we've got, a total of five candidates that are just chewing each other up alive here. How do you think voters are digesting all of this right now? Because, Tim, as you know, there's a lot of confusion. People are wondering why they couldn't get their act together. Why aren't we not, you know, voting for state reps and state senates right now?
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on all that?
Well, first, let me say that labor is united behind our endorsement for Tim Ryan for the U.S. Senate. Let's get that out of the way, I guess.
Okay.
And on the Republican, he'll face whoever, like you say, on the Republican side, it's a field of five multimillionaires, all out of touch with regular people and working Ohioans, none of them which have laid out any sort of an economic plan, talked about how to lower costs and raise wages, not one of them. They're just attacking one another. It's a clown show. So Tim Ryan will face the winner that comes out of that mess. And then, as you'd indicated, we've also you got the congressional races today, the U.S. House of Representative races, and we've endorsed Chantel Brown there. She's done a great job with instrumental vote on the infrastructure bill that will be paying dividends in Ohio for at least a decade to rebuild the state and rebuild the country. And then, as you had indicated, we've talked in prior shows about the redistricting situation here in Ohio. The Republicans on the Ohio Redistricting Commission five times now have sent over legislative maps that the Ohio Supreme Court has ruled unconstitutional five times, and they're reviewing the second congressional map, and there's a good chance that that one's going to be ruled unconstitutional as well. So as you'd indicated, that it's still a legal matter. But the primary today will be for the congressional, the U.S. Senate, the statewide offices, and then potentially in August we'll have a primary for the state legislative races. It's a real mess. Shouldn't have played out this way. The voters were clear in 2015 and 2018 when they voted to end legislative map gerrymandering and rigging the maps just to stay in power. So that's kind of where we're at, Flash. And as a result, I think turnout's going to be low today because folks are just confused and maybe fed up. I don't know. We're encouraging, you know, people to go out and vote, and obviously union members to get out and vote.
Now, the congressional maps. Now, we lost one seat. We had 16. It's going down to 15. So they are using new maps. Now, how long will those maps be in effect, Tim? What's the story on that?
Yeah, it's a real problem. We're actually voting on maps, voting for members of the U.S. House of Representatives with maps that are still under legal review. And the conventional wisdom is they're going to be ruled unconstitutional. So and we may have new maps later this year or for the 2024 elections for Congress. So that's still a matter to be determined. So But what we know is the maps that are in place, we go from 16 districts to 15 because our population did not keep up with the rest of the country. That's what the census is used for. And I encourage everybody to get out there again and vote for Labor's endorsed candidates, which include Chantel Brown up in the northeast part of the state.
Now, on the state races, could this end up in federal court? I saw a story recently that if the lawmakers don't get their act together and it's a stalemate, then the feds could come in. Is that the case? Can you explain that part?
Yeah, here's where we're at on the state legislative maps. Four state legislative maps have been ruled unconstitutional. The Republicans on the redistricting commission did not like the answers they were getting from the Ohio Supreme Court, even though it's a Supreme Court with a 4-3 Republican majority. They weren't happy with their answers they were getting, so they went judge shopping and filed a lawsuit in Southern District of Ohio in the federal court. And you had three judges down there that heard the case. Two judges were Trump-appointed judges. One was a Clinton-appointed judge. And they voted 2-1 to say, well, we're going to give you a little while longer to get these state legislative maps done. And if you don't get it done, we're going to install the third state legislative map, the third out of four state legislative maps that were put forward, which were ruled by the high court to be unconstitutional. So there's really no incentive for the Ohio Redistricting Commission, the Republicans on there, to do anything. They're going to meet tomorrow. Chances are they'll do nothing, and then the federal court will reconvene and say, okay, you didn't do anything. We're going to put the third state legislative maps that were sent, that were adopted, even though they were ruled unconstitutional, in play, and make those maps for the another primary in Ohio, which would potentially be August 2nd.
Sadly, Tim, the real winner in this mess, law firms. I was reading one of the law firms tied to the Republican Party has so far earned almost $600,000. I mean, they were doing a lot of the maps for them. The Democrats, too, not nowhere near that number. They raked in $174,000, one of their law firms. And then there's Ohio University. They were paid $282,000 to come up with a census data map that that was used to create the map. So that's what's going on in the state of Ohio right now. I want to turn the page and talk about the state income tax, which according to a proposal that was revealed last week, would disappear. The state income tax would disappear under a new piece of legislation. Can you give us some details on this? I mean, what does this have legs, Tim, or what? I mean, it's a 10-year plan. What's the story here?
Well, let's hope it doesn't go anywhere. We obviously will oppose it. Anytime you get rid of the way programs and services are supported in the state by having it spread out through an income tax and you take that away, what happens is then you raise fees on all sorts of things that hurt working people and people with less means the most. A usage tax is terribly regressive. And so two things will happen. Working people and those with less means are going to end up paying more in the long run and will have less services and programs that Ohioans have counted on for many, many years. So it's early in its legislative stage, but we'll be opposing it, and we'll see where it goes.
All right. One more item here, and there was a rally yesterday. I know you were part of it. Senator Sherrod Brown was there. In fact, he's going to be on the show this week. Jimmy Hart from the Metal Trades Department. I'm talking about the proposal to build what's called a dry dock in Lorain, Ohio, and the issue is, apparently, the Navy's got a lot of ships that need repair, and they're not getting repaired. That's the problem. And this is a proposal by a retired Navy captain who sunk a lot of his money into it by the name of Ed Bartlett. Maybe you could fill me in here. What seems to be the problem with this whole situation? I know they're trying to get a bunch of people on board. That's why they had this rally yesterday. But I'd like to get your opinion.
Well, you're right. The Navy only has two submarine repair ports. They're on the East Coast. So there's a public-private partnership proposal out there that the AFL-CIO Metal Trades has been working on with this organization called Bartlett Maritime. And what it would do is it would put a major port in Lorain, Ohio, and we'd have a dry dock there, and we'd be helping to ease the backlog of all the submarine maintenance that's gone undone. Uh-huh. It would rapidly increase our naval readiness. It would, you know, do a whole lot to get our marine highway back to where it should be. And it's a real problem. Everybody understands the crisis and the problem. It's just a matter of where's the Navy how they want to, you know, solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And we made the case yesterday that, you know, workers are ready to build the port and workers are ready to do maintenance on the submarines. I mean, it's not like we don't have history here in shipbuilding and ship maintenance. And in this proposal, we dry dock submarines, work on them. Parts would be railed back and forth between Lorain and Lordstown. So there'd be all sorts of economic development and job opportunity in Ohio as a result of this. So it'd be a win-win. And Ohioans have always stepped up to support our military, whether being in the military or working to assist the military, as we've done all these years with Jeep and aviation and glass and rubber. And our workers down at Piketon at the gaseous diffusion plant down there to help us win the Cold War. Ohioans have always stepped up in service and at work to help our military, and we're ready to go to work. And that's what the rally was yesterday, to just make sure that the U.S. Department of Navy, the Pentagon, and Congress understand that this is a solid proposal and Ohioans are ready to do our part.
When we had Jimmy Hart on the show, this was back in March, he indicated between Lorain and Lordstown, we're looking at 5,000 jobs. Is that pretty accurate in your estimation? And is that still being talked about, the 5,000 job figure?
Yeah, the 5,000 direct jobs. And then, you know, you would expect some downstream and upstream sort of work as well related to it. There'll be a lot of construction work and then a lot of permanent workers. And, Flash, we've talked about the industrial decline in Ohio for decades, right? So
sure.
This will go a long way to helping a couple cities directly that have been hit hard by unchecked globalization and automation and the like, as well as economic development throughout the region.
Oh, you think about those two areas. I mean, Lorain had American Shipbuilding. That's when George Steinbrenner was running it. He moved that out decades ago. Ford had a big plant there. U.S. Steel had a big plant there. Lordstown, I mean, think what happened with Lordstown. They used to do the old Chevy Vega, then the Cobalt, and then the Cruze, and now it's pretty much a ghost town. I know they're trying to bring some electric vehicles there, but It's just a drop in the bucket compared to what used to be there. So we'll stay on it. Hopefully you get all the players on board. Something down the road's going to happen here. Tim, thanks for the update. You take care. I'll let you go back, check out all the polls today, and we'll talk next month and dissect it all, okay?
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going down to Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to check out with Glenn Kelly. He's with the Bricklayers, Local 8 in the Southeast. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity to sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating, keep those five-star ratings coming. We certainly do appreciate that. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Well, I stand corrected. We're not going to Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to Augusta, Georgia right now. Joining us on line number two is Mr. Glenn Kelly. And Glenn is president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers Local 8 in the Southeast. Website is baclocal8se.org. Glenn, you know the Masters is over. So what are you still doing in Augusta?
I know, man. Flash. Yeah, you know, the match is over, but the work has to still continue down here in Augusta. You know, we're working on a big nuclear power plant. We got a couple pre-jobs this morning, so we got to go in here and lay claim to a lot of the work just being done at Plant Vogtle and the Savannah River site, you know, where we have another project coming. So we got a good bit of work in this area down here in the Augusta area, so...
Yeah, I heard there's a lot happening down there, and I want to get into some of the specifics there. Plant Vogtle, I guess that's a nuclear facility. But talk to me about your territory there, and how many members make up Local 8 Southeast?
So Local 8 Southeast, we have roughly 2,000 members in the Southeast. You know, it's all right-to-work states. Again, I think I've mentioned that. And, you know, we're down here trying to organize. A lot of my jurisdiction, you know, down here we cover the bricklayers, the block layers, cement masons, you know, tile, marble, terrazzo, plasters. You know, it's a ton of work right now. We're definitely working in terms of organizing, trying to organize new contractors in. And, you know, sometimes it's even – dealing with your existing contractors, right? Trying to keep them on board and doing the right thing, especially, you know, down here in the right-to-work state. So it's always a constant, you know, chew gum and walk at the same time strategy, right? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
For folks who don't, who hadn't really done the right to work, it's constantly a challenge. You know, as you try to make ground and gain ground, you got to make sure that what you've already got, right? It's continue to do the right thing and to continue for you to be able to hopefully hold the mold and get these contractors to do the right thing. But we're working on it, man, and it's great strides. And right now with the environment of working people and people are, you know, being tired of the bosses running the show. And, you know, I think COVID even kind of maybe has given us an edge there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, folks are just, you know, wanting to make, they want better working conditions. They want to make, you know, better money. And they want good representation, fair representation. And they want, you know, so folks who they want to be able to stand unified to make sure that people are getting their fair shake. I mean, you see it across the country, right, in terms mm-hmm. of organizing, you know, down in Bessemer. You know, I think they're still counting the votes down there. Yeah. The RWSU campaign. And, you know, we're definitely standing in solidarity with those folks. But, you know, we got a couple – plants coming down south, and you know, a lot of the work that we have for, like, you know, national maintenance agreement work, you know, with these like the GM plant over in Spring Hill outside of Nashville, right outside of Nashville. You also have the Ford plant over in Memphis, Tennessee. And so, yeah, we have work that is coming and really available. When you talk about the South, people are like, wow, you know, they know how the South has so much going on, or because it's right to work in most of our states, you know, folks, they know that's challenging, it's hard, but it's work that's got to be done, right? And we got to continue to on those efforts. So hopefully, you know, that continues to elevate what we're doing down here.
We've talked about right to work, and it should be called right to work for less. And I saw this posted right on your website. The average worker in a right to work for less state earns roughly $5,333 a year less than a worker in a free bargaining state. And, you know, you take that number and then you look at job safety. It's not as good in a right to work state. You know, benefits, not the same when you have union versus non-union. We know all the numbers and all that, but unfortunately, these state legislatures don't understand that. And that being said, I'm just wondering, you know, Georgia turned blue in 2020. And I'm just wondering, is anybody talking about getting rid of right to work over there right now? I'm just kind of curious about that, Glenn.
So, yeah, it's a flash. I mean, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, you're right. Georgia, you know, I feel like right now is ground zero in the South, right? Ground zero for not only workers' rights, but voting rights, right?
Yeah.
You know, Georgia is ground zero for just the, you know, average American wanting to fight for their rights, you know, to be able to organize or to be able to vote, for that matter, for democracy, right?
Yeah.
And so the conversations are being had in Georgia. The organizing is being had. And we're having to make sure that we are partnering not only with our labor affiliates, like, right, you know, our public sector and private sector unions, you know, that make up the AFL-CIO, but we also are partnering with community groups, right? Trying to, because when you're organizing, you got to build coalitions. You know,
right.
I'm a big proponent of that. You got to build coalitions. And I was making, you know, I was talking to a group of our members the other day about building coalitions, right? And you got to look at it. You know, we talk about right to work. You talk about organized labor. Let's take Georgia, for instance. It's got probably 200,000, you know, members across the state of Georgia, union members that make up the AFL-CIO. And then, you know, if you go outside of that, you know, roughly about 200 or something thousand, right, if it's including retirees. And you think about the overall electorate of Georgia, right? I can't remember what our, you know, 6-5 million people. I can't remember what it is now. It's probably what was the dad, you know, since the last census. But you got to think about it. I mean, when these elections in Georgia have been in the last couple, right, 11,000 votes, I think the president got, I think the senators, you know, Senator Warnock, Senator Ossoff, around 12,000 votes, 11,000, 12,000 votes, you know, margins of winning. And so, yeah, I mean, that's you're right. Georgia went blue, right? Or a light shade of blue, right? People would say, consider us purple, but, you know, with a light shade of blue. But it has created Georgia to be the ground zero, right? And if you think about it, our union members, if we continue to educate our members on the importance on the issues, I think we're going to continue to grow that margin, right? And a lot of the folks who are running for our office are coming to us. They're talking to us. I had a meeting a couple weeks ago. You know, we had our Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Stacey Abrams, join us. You know, she came by and she talked about the importance of unions and why, you know, we need to organize and what we need to continue to strengthen workers' rights, you know, and she was able to have a conversation with our international secretary of treasurer, Rob Arnold. And the conversation there was really, really tangible about what she plans to do here in the state of Georgia to help working people, right? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, you know, you don't get that, right? I mean, you know, folks looking at our labor movement has, you know, it has kind of been put on the back burner. But this administration that we have now has been the most pro-union administration we've had in a long time, right?
Yeah,
you're
right.
Saying union at the podium, right? At the bully pulpit. And you got a lot of administration folks in this cabinet, even a card-carrying union member, Marty Walsh, that's out there helping, being able to move that message. So working people, and I think that, you know, getting back to the basics, right, it's helping in those efforts. And I think that having organized labor, having the unions as a part of that conversation is vital. And I think that, you know, with that happening, again, in Georgia, the enthusiasm on the ground is there. And it's a groundswell of enthusiasm. And it's also that the fact that people are just sick and tired, right? This, like I said, the pandemic really showed us people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so they want to organize. They want to speak up. They want to, you know, democracy is on the ram, and they want to continue to make sure that we continue to enjoy those rights. And so I think that folks are starting to wake up, right? But like I said, again, you know, we have opportunity. You know, we had the Attorney General candidate come down and speak to our members. We had Labor Commissioner candidate come down and speak to, you know, our members. And these are labor-endorsed candidates, right?
Yeah.
And so what we think in terms of this year is that people are going to come out. I know they say enthusiasm's down right now, but I think that our membership is going to be up in force, and they're going to go out there and vote like they've never voted before. And I just hope that translates, and I think that will translate into another victory down here in the state of Georgia, man. So, you know, we're really excited to be in the South, right? One of the states that's going to hopefully try to overturn right the world. That is one of the things that gubernatorial candidate leader Stacey Abrams is talking about, you know, repealing the state's anti-PLA bills that they got on, that they passed over the recent years, you know, where you can't have project labor agreements in the state of Georgia on these different state and municipality project areas. So, you know, those are things, and this is something that probably would have been a conversation, let's say, who knows, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, 30 years ago, this wouldn't even be mentioned. So, yeah, I think they understand the value of organized labor and building that coalition, right? Because mm-hmm. our margin, our members can make the difference in these elections. And so you got to build not only with the community groups, organized labor to continue to be able to build that winning coalition that we really enjoy today. And so and I want to touch on what you said about right to work, you know, a little bit about the average worker in the non-union realm. I mean, I think that the 5,000 number has actually grown. I think that our members are making, you know, way more than the non-union. I think that number of 5,000 may have been maybe 10,000 or more now because of we've been able to secure some decent wage and benefit increases, right? Mm-hmm. And so our members are enjoying that, and they are out there talking to their friends and their family, and, you know, and now, you know, we're in a time right now where people, like I said earlier, is just waking up. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm feeling really good about that, those efforts.
Well, they're waking up. We just got to keep them awake. Let me put it that way. I mean, that's the easiest way to say it.
Yeah,
because it, we got to stick to working class issues. And you know what's going on with these culture wars that are happening. It's a big distraction, and it's confusing. And that's all by intent when you take a look at it, because when what we really want to focus on is wages. We want to focus on retirement security. We want to focus on job safety. Those are the things that are near and dear. You want to be able to go to work in the morning and come home at the end of the day and have a decent paycheck and have some time with your family and go on vacation. That's what workers want, and that's what they deserve. Glenn, I got to take a quick break here. Glenn Kelly joining us from Augusta, Georgia. He's president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers Local 8, BAC Local 8SE.org. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to Augusta, Georgia. Joining us on our live line today is Glenn Kelly. He's president of the Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers Local 8 Southeast. Website is baclocal8se.org. Glenn, I love the posting on your website. Our goal is to think outside the box. If it can be done legally, we'll find a way to make it work. I love that. I love that line. I want to talk about, you mentioned in the previous segment, project labor agreements are banned in Georgia. Is that the case, and how long has it been the case?
Yeah, it's been there a number of years. Republicans took over the legislature back in early 2000s, and they passed a lot of mean bills. And like today, as you see, they still continue to push mean bills. And the thing about it is just being educated, right? I mean, I think if they're more educated and more willing to listen to what organized labor has to what organized labor is doing and what the building trades especially are doing, I think they would be a lot more apt to us. But I mean, of course, down here, like in other areas, a lot of other places, I talked to some of the leaders across the country that I've, in passing, they have, some of the, like, more in the Northeast, right? The Republicans kind of understand a little better about why the building trades are very important and why that good quality work, so you can get it done the first time, get it done the first time the right way.
Right.
They've been a real big proponents of that, and they get it more than some of our guys down here down south that, just totally against union because they hate the word union. But it's art. It's us, right? We have to take the narrative. It's just like, the messaging today. I think you brought up earlier about the culture issues. We got to make sure that we stay on message and we talk about why the union is important and why we're here to do what we're, to organize and grow the market share. And so, yeah, I mean, PLA is being banned in Georgia. It's in a lot of the states down south, they've tried to ban PLAs across the state. But here's the one of the great things is that you look at these federal jobs and you can't do, on the federal perspective, they don't have any say, right? And so that's what, that's one good thing about having a pro-union administration, again, that is touting unions, that's trying to make it better and easier for unions. And, so that's huge to me. It's really huge to me that folks are out there talking about that. So,
Glenn, I want to talk about the work going on. You mentioned the Ford plant, the GM plant, and your crews are going to those various states. And I've heard that. I know some iron workers in Alabama are going to be working on that Ford facility. That's a $5 billion facility in Tennessee. That's crazy. I'm just wondering, are you prepared for the workload? I mean, think about this infrastructure bill. That money hasn't even started pouring in right now. That's well over $1 trillion that's going to be spread around the country. I'm just wondering, what about your apprenticeship programs, getting ready for all that kind of stuff? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, Fletcher. I'll speak to that. I mean, I mentioned Plant Vogtle earlier. One of the largest at one time, one of the largest union, 100% union projects in the country, right? And I say that people are like, what, down south? I'm like, yeah, down south is where we have one of the largest union, 100% union projects going on right there in our state of Georgia, right? And that's also a huge success. And, you know, and to give you a little background on that, I mean, you know, nuclear's been getting attacked a lot, and we've been having to educate a lot of elected officials who are running for office here in the state of Georgia about the importance of building these kind of plants and this clean nuclear energy, right? Clean nuclear energy. Right. Of the future, and why is it important and vital that these plants are being built, and they're being built starting Union and finishing Union. This particular project started out non-union, and we were able to organize and get it to be a union project, and the unions have got it back on track. And because, and people talk about the price tag, but the price tag would have never been the way it is right now if they would have started Union and finished Union. And I think this, once this plant goes online, that's going to really change the narrative on number one, clean nuclear energy, but also good paying union jobs, and how it's helped people, especially in the minority community in the area, get into the trades, get into good paying jobs, and they'll be able to have a union card to go across the country. You know, GM, you know, the GM plant over in Spring Hill, yeah, we have bricklayers working out there. We've got, you know, cement masons working out there. We've got tile setters working out there. And, you know, so one of the glorious thing about BAC's diversity in trades is that we have multiple trades working out there at one time, but that is vital. And in terms of apprenticeship, that's helped us. You know, recruiting has been, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. Recruiting has been a little bit tough, you know, with the younger folks right now. But I think that we're getting across the curve, and we are in bringing folks in that want to have a career in the trades. And so, the folks are out there. You just got to get creative in finding them and get creative in your messaging and bringing folks into the trade. And so, yeah, our apprenticeship programs, I think, are ready. I think that we're continuing to push those, right? And so as this Memphis project, like you said, it's a huge project, right? Supposed to be one of the biggest in the Northern Hemisphere, right? You know, and it's grateful to see it's coming here down south. And I mean, it's just like a number of other projects. I've been, you know, we were at our council meeting back in Miami this early this year, and they were talking about the workload, right, and how the South has so many billions of dollars worth of work coming down south. And I think, and that's why it's critical, right, for the labor movement, for us all to continue to invest in the South, come up with really good strategic strategies in terms of organizing, because, I mean, that's where you got the most potential growth right now. And I know that sometimes when it's tough, it's hard to want to for those investments, but I think those investments will pay off greatly in the future. And so it's great to be able to say you got a lot of huge projects like this down south. I mean, we hadn't had this type of work and hadn't had this type of projects in quite some time, right? We're always trying to organize and, in the private sector as much as we can, and we're going to still do that, right?
Yep.
Again, like I said earlier, we got to chew gum walk at the same time. We got to continue. We got to manage projects. We got to make sure these projects are built, you know, union. And, you know, hey, down in Augusta, if you look at it, in the Waynesboro, Georgia area is where the Plant Vogtle really sits. I remember the first generation. My uncle worked on that plant, right? The first one and two, not three and four. I got some, I got a brother working out. I got some other family working out. Then I got a lot of folks that I know in the community that are working out there. And the folks thought that, oh man, how are the unions going to man that job? Well, we had to get out there. We had to, speak with the contractors and make sure they understand the vital of using per diems, right, to travel folks in. But we were able to get a lot of local folks, right, in that small area trained and even working on a project that's going to be, you know, that is one of, I think it's really historic, right? It's the first nuclear power plant since, I think, 1978, if I'm not mistaken. You know, forgive me if I'm wrong on the date, that's being built, you know, in quite some time. And so, you know, organized labor is doing
story.
It, right? Your unions are doing it, so... Yeah.
Great story. You know what? I'm going to have to button up the show right now, but I love what you told me. It started out non-union and it became union. That's a whole show in itself, how that happened.
Yes.
So, Glenn, you stay in touch. You are great. I could see why you're president of the bricklayers down there in the Southeast. Glenn Kelly, BAC Local 8 Southeast. You keep it going in the right direction down there, my brother. And let's talk down the road. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan, Flash. Thank you again. Appreciate you too, brother.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow,
Ironworkers, Local 477, that would be in Alabama, and the latest from the United Labor Agency. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.